Welcome to the South London Voices podcast, produced by tigerspirit.co.uk. This podcast celebrates people in South London and beyond. I'm your host, Yang Mei Ui. Now, I'm very excited because this is my very first episode and I have my special guest, Stevie Hendon, a local South London author. And we're going to be talking about flying rockets and bombs and doodlebugs and his wonderful novels, which he describes as spiritual fantasy. So, but before we get to Stevie, I need to talk to you guys who are listening to this as an audio podcast, because there is actually a slideshow version with video and images featuring my special guest, Stevie Hendon, and also some video and images of the things that we are going to be talking about today. And you can watch that slideshow by going to southlondonvoices.co.uk and then searching for Stevie Hendon. That's H-E-N-D-E-N. So, Stevie Hendon, welcome to South London Voices.
Thank you very much for inviting me to talk to you today, Yang Mei. It's very, very appreciated. And I'm honoured to be your first interviewee.
Wonderful. Now, the reason I invited you as my first guest is because you have quite a long-term connection with South London.
I do indeed. I think there's not that many people I meet who can demonstrate sort of tentacles that sort of go quite so far back. Although I will sort of qualify sort of South London slightly by saying I actually have sort of tentacles that extend into both South London and East London, because my father's family were very much South Londoners. My mother's family were EastEnders, but we'll talk about the South London today. I'm very proud of both parts,
of course.
But yes, I've done quite a lot of research, ancestry.com, on the internet of my family tree, and I've been able to trace my father's family in South London back to about the late 18th, early 19th sort of century, and all sides of my father's family was sort of Deptford, Bermondsey, Rotherhithe, so they were sort of basically South London Cockneys. It was that part of the world. Then, lastly, there's lots of different threads to the family, and I won't sort of bore you with all of them, but of more recent times, I've got very strong Dulwich connections on my father's side. My great-grandparents came to live in Marmora Road in, I can't tell you the exact year, 1905, something like that. And then they latterly lived in Burbage Road, and my grandparents lived in Therapian Road, and then latterly at 75 Dovercourt Road, which was my sort of first connection with Dulwich as a child.
Right, and so can you tell us a little bit about the story of your family in terms of, what they were doing and mm-hmm. how they obviously slowly came up in the world?
Yes, I mean, I think it's very interesting when one does family research, seeing how the growth of the cities in the 19th century sort of sucked people in, which was the case because prior to that period the majority of the population was rural, and it was only after the Industrial Revolution that it became predominantly urban. And I can certainly see that with my family, because sort of prior to that kind of period, the Hendons sort of came from somewhere in Kent. It's a Kentish name, Hendon. It's a very it's a very Kentish thing. But then they they come into London with the Industrial sort of Revolution, and my grandfather's sort of side of the family, who the Hendons, they were sort of very, very working class. There seemed to be several generations of them who were iron moulders. I'm not entirely sure what an iron moulder is, but it's something very industrial. And as I say, they very much hark from sort of the Bermondsey and Deptford part of the world. My grandmother's family, who were called Young, had actually sort of become somewhat middle class a little bit sort of earlier on, and in the mid 19th century. They ran a baker's in Clapham, in Manor Street in Clapham. And then for reasons which we will never know, I think one of the sons obviously went to a good school and started to do well, and ended up in some kind of law or sort of something like that. And they migrated to North London. And my grandmother was actually born in Claremont Square in Clerkenwell, which I have visited. And then it was only latterly, as my great-grandfather did very well, he was a manager at a bookbinder's called Eyre and Spottiswood, who I've never heard of, but apparently they were the royal bookbinders, and that's when they moved to Momola Road, and bought a great big house there. So he must have become quite successful at that point. And then my grandfather, so then I think she might have married somebody a little bit more working class than her. Those things happened, but my grandfather did well, and he was, this is my grandfather and my grandmother, who lived at 75 Dover Court Road by this time. And my grandfather was an accountant for the gas board, and he was based on the North Greenwich Peninsula. Where the dome, where the O2 is now, so you used to get the tram from Lordship Lane to the North Greenwich Peninsula every day. And one of the knock-on effects of him being an accountant for the gas board was that even in the 1960s, my grandmother had gaslight in the house.
Gosh.
So the house on 75 Crow Road had gaslight. They had electric as well, but there were a proportion, because I don't know whether he got it cheap or free, but quite a lot of the house was lit by gas. And I don't know whether you're familiar with it, young lady, probably not, you're far too young. But gaslight has a very specific smell from the mantles. And when you talk about these things, I can still get an essence of that now, after quite a lot of years.
Yeah. This is so fascinating, because in a way the story of your family is the story of London and the British people in terms of the Industrial Revolution. From an agricultural country,
yes,
we became industrial,
yes,
and then through education and the value of education for your family,
yes,
helped them have a leg up,
yes,
and also hard work.
Yes.
A lot of hard-working people in
your, yes,
family that have made good for themselves.
Yes, it's an education, hard work, and I think following on from the same thing, it's the growth of the middle classes. So the Industrial Revolution first, as they sucked people in from the rural parts into the cities, but then on the back of that, in the later 19th century, we see the growth of the middle classes, which seems to be the story with my family.
Yes, and so to bring us up to date, mm-hmm, tell us a little bit about you and your life here, mm-hmm, in South London.
Right. Well, I've lived in South London the vast majority of my life. I had a brief spell when I was in my teens. My parents moved out to Surrey, and then as soon as I could escape, I came back again. the stockbroker belt sort of lifestyle doesn't really appeal to me, and South London always had a great draw. So I've lived all of my adult life within about a 2 mile radius of Dulwich, of Court Lane and Dulwich. I've always been able to see the Crystal Palace transmitter. So I feel sort of very, very attached to here, and I feel very part of here. I mean, Neil and I's, my husband is called Neil, and our big adventure a few years ago was we went as far as Surrey Quays. That felt quite nice, I don't have a problem with it, but it felt very strange because that was 3 miles away, possibly.
So South London is in your blood. So
it's in my blood, yeah, absolutely.
And so what is it about South London that keeps you here and that you really love about it?
There are so many things. I think part of it is not to do with the place, it's to do with me. And I'm a person that becomes very attached to things and places and people. So therefore, the concept of actually moving somewhere else becomes quite difficult. I love the familiarity, you know, that, I mean, I went to school in Penge, you know, my family, my father's family lived here, my mother's family lived in Beckenham, so this has been my circulation area all my life, and that feeling of familiarity, of knowing every road and every place, actually is something that makes me feel personally extremely comfortable. However, in spite of the fact that I'm saying I'm a person that doesn't like moving very much, that's kind of negative in a way. If I didn't like here and South London, I would leave. I mean, there is no question. So there are, apart from the sort of slightly negative things that don't like moving, there is an awful lot of positivity about the fact of wanting to be. And I say, I think, you know, I could. That there are just so many aspects of that. Answer to that question. I mean, there's the family connection. So it, you know, it's feeling that I've got those roots, I think is important to me. But then actually sort of looking about sort of some of the sort of characteristics of sort of South London, I've always liked it because it's to one degree or another multicultural. I don't want to live in an environment that is 100% anything. I like a melting pot.
Diverse melting pot.
Is very important for me. I like, what I particularly like is the sort of the stretch of South London that runs along the line of what was the old Great North Wood. So from Crystal Palace through Dulwich through Sydenham, so you have this lovely ridge punctuated by woodland, you know, sort of Dulwich Wood and One Tree Hill and sort of places like that, which I think are absolutely stunning. And also I like the feeling of height and the fact that you can look down onto the city, which I think is very beautiful. And the views from places like Canonbury Road and Forest Hill, for example, which I think they call the Forest Hill Alps, or from the top of Gypsy Hill, Crystal Palace, looking down over London, I think are absolutely amazing. So I love that. I always remember when I was living in Crystal Palace in the late 70s, and I used to go to a barber's there. It was like an old Greek Cypriot guy who had sort of come here after the war, and I think a lot of the barbers were Greek Cypriots, you know, still at that time. And he told me that he'd previously lived, I can't remember where it was, but somewhere further in, you know, and he was advised to move to Crystal Palace because the air was good. So I like the feeling of, you know, the hills and the height and the greenery that goes with that. You know, I love the woodland and I love the parks, and I mean, we are extremely blessed, you know, with green space. So that's very important to me. I really like the architecture as well, because I think that South London has got such a diverse, you know, we've got some really interesting buildings like, you know, the Picture Gallery and Horniman's and Greenwich, you know, sort of things like that. You know, we've got a great range of, we've got some really sort of intriguing sort of Victorian, you know, Gothic mansions. You know, we have some very interesting, in Dulwich, we have some very interesting 1960s modernist, properties, you know, a fantastic range, sort of really interesting, very varied. I find some parts of London much more uniform, and I think one of the things I love about something, it's all very varied and sort of mixed up. Eclectic, you know, is a word I would use. And then I like some of the, all sort of melting pots like sort of Brixton and Dulwich, you know, I said Dulwich, I mean Peckham, which are really, you know, really sort of vibrant, you know, sort of crazy places. You know, you go to Peckham and you can buy every type of possible plastic bucket, every type of vegetable that you've actually never heard of, and it's incredibly sort of, you know, incredibly vibrant, you know, sort of kind of atmosphere. So I really like that as well. And I also like the fact that South London has changed. I mean, I know there is a lot of discussion about gentrification, and, you know, there are those who condemn gentrification as being wholly bad. And I would argue that I think it's a matter of proportionality and balance. Certainly in my lifetime, I've seen South London's removed from being... It was a bit drab, you know. It was never as bad as people made out it was. But it was a bit drab, and you couldn't actually eat out or go to the shops or do anything cultural. You know, it was a bit of a drab place. I always liked it, but now, you know, we have, you know, fantastic food culture, and, you know, Peckham, for example, has probably some of the most cutting edge, you know, food places in London. You know, which is great. So I really like that change. And yes, we don't want to go to Brixton or Peckham, and it ought to have been homogenised into chain coffee shops and things. So that's the sort of the extreme of gentrification. But from, you know, where it stands at the moment, we've got, you know, fantastic restaurants and cafes and interesting shops, you know, on every corner. I think it's a pretty good position for it to have got into.
And one of the things I think that I was just thinking about as you were speaking was, for one thing, I just love that lyrical description that you had of the beautiful hills and the woods and all that, and also the vibrancy of, you know, that contrasts with that of you, of the urban environment. Yes. But what I was thinking about, actually, that touched my heart was really about family. Mm-hmm. And I have ancestry envy, to some extent, because your family have been in this one place for several, many, many generations, going back to Victorian times.
Yes.
And of course, my family were originally from China, and they migrated due to hardships and famine and so on to Malaya, as it then was, now Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And then I have migrated from Malaysia here to the UK, and I've been in the UK now for about 40 years.
Yes.
Giving away my age here. And in South London for about 15 years. Uh-huh. And I think also my siblings are sort of in the area as well. And for me, this idea of being settled in one place, and I don't have as long a connection with as you with South London, but I feel very settled here. And I think that's partly why I wanted to create this podcast, because I realise I've got so many wonderful and interesting friends and people that I know in South London, and I want to celebrate them, and you're one of them. And also just to celebrate the place that I'm now calling home. This sense of South London as a melting pot, that there is the history of people like you and other families like yours who have been here for generations, and also all those other people who have come over the years, the Greek Cypriots,
who have enriched it, you know, so much into making sort of what it is now. And I think, you know, if I can just sort of cut in there for a moment, you know, I think what struck me as you were saying that is, it's almost like what we're both saying is a little bit of an antithesis to what a lot of people aspire to these days, because so many people like move around the world all the time and they want to be here for 6 months and there for 6 months, and what you know, what we're talking about, you know, is the value of establishing roots. And I mean, your roots are pretty long here. You know, for me, having that sort of sense of ancestral roots as well, just adds an extra dimension to that. I actually, I remember talking about this once, you know, not that long ago, with somebody, and she said to me, "Where have you lived?" She said, "You never lived in another city." I said, "No, I don't want to." And I don't think, and I'm not judging anybody else's choices, but I think that sometimes the, you know, the concept of, you know, sort of attachment and community and roots becomes a little bit undervalued in today's very fast world. And, you know, we're all different, and I know other people want to offer it in different ways, but that's how I've wished to make myself feel comfortable, is by making those kind of connections, and having the family ones, you know, that go back all those years, just it just kind of gives that extra dimension of, you know, making one feel attached.
Yes, yes, it's great. So just moving on now, in terms of some of the history that has also affected your family is, of course, World War II and the bombs that fell on London, particularly South London, and its impact on South London. Can you tell us a bit about what you've researched and
Yes, of course I can. I mean, I was sort of brought up from the knee high onwards with my mother telling me stories of what happened during the war and my grandmother telling me stories of what happened during the war. So I always found it rather intriguing, I probably had a bit of a morbid fascination with it in a way, and then sort of so I had that as these various sort of family stories sort of going on, and my family were very fortunate. I mean, nobody got killed, but there was there were stories of the experience of living through that period, and I think latterly what sort of intrigued me on the subject, and particularly in relation to the bombing of London, was really because I'm interested in architecture and in infrastructure and an environment, is how did this place come to be like it is? What are the factors that have created this place? And, you drive around and you suddenly go, hang on, that bit looks really different. how did it end up like that? So, and very often that is, of course, because of bombing. And I think for me that was quite both those things, both the stories that I heard, from when I was a child, and then being very interested sort of in infrastructure and architecture, sort of fired me to want to know more. So when I was having a little bit of a lull from working a few years ago, I decided that I wanted to actually, I wanted to undertake some research, and specifically on the part of the bombing of London, which was the vengeance weapon attacks, and these were the attacks which were undertaken by Hitler from June 1944, using first the V1 flying bomb, which was a cruise missile, and then secondly the V2 rocket, which was a ballistic missile, and I found these. This is particularly intriguing. So I spent lots of hours, I have no idea how many, researching in quite a lot of different libraries and archives, but the most of the time in the London Metropolitan Archive, which is in Clerkenwell, which is just one of those magical places, where you can sit in absolute peace, surrounded by huge amounts of documents and maps and, people very quietly sort of researching. So basically, using the information that they have there as my primary tool, I was able to compile a record of the V1 and the V2 attacks across. I couldn't do the whole of London. I mean, it would have been enormous, but I did it across like most of South London, and then I translated that information onto a website, which is still running, and people have been very interested in that over the years, because they've emailed me and sort of gone, well, what happened in my street? And I go, okay, I can tell you, on the 30th of June, 1944, and because people are very intrigued by this, either because they want to know how their street ended up looking like it is, or perhaps they have family who were injured or sadly killed sort of during the period. And the flying bombs and the rocket attacks were enormously instrumental in shaping South London as we know it. Yeah, and it's only when you really start to study the statistics that you realise quite how much, because during the Blitz, which was conventional bombing in 1940-41, South London was bombed, but it was really the East End and the docks and the city that had the highest concentrations. But during the V1 and V2 attacks, a lot of them fell short, And the V1s particularly, because they were fired from Normandy. When they fell short, they fell in South London. So it has changed the infrastructure and the architecture in large swathes. And I can drive you around parts of South London and say, that's why it looks like it. And for me, there's just something eminently fascinating about that.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. And unfortunately, that can make a whole podcast in itself.
Absolutely. I won't go on too long about it.
Just move on. But for people who want to maybe check up on your website and find out more about what you found out, what's the web link?
It's flyingbombsandrockets.com.
Thank you. Now, moving on to your novels. You are a very eclectic Renaissance man.
I am a very eclectic Renaissance man. I like that, actually. I remember that. Thank you.
So your novels, which you describe as spiritual fantasy, what's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, I think I used those words when I was sort of searching to describe the genre, but I mean, I'm not sure there is a genre, actually. But you know, sometimes you have to pigeonhole things a little bit. So it probably does. It does give a little bit of a flavour, about what I write about. So my first book, which is called The Lost Boy, The Doodlebug, and The Mysterious Number 80. It's a time travel story, and it's also managed to get flying bombs in it as well.
Of course,
of course. And it's set in a slightly fantasy road in Dulwich. So there is a lot in it about South London. There's a lot in it. None of it. People always say to me, "Oh, is it your story?" And I say, "No, it's not my story." There are inspirations of. Yeah, there are references to and inspirations of. But you know, it's not my story at all. And but it's also it is quite spiritual, because there's quite a lot of it gets to be quite deep about fate, and how much control we have over our own destinies, and as to how much of that ? Is mapped out for us in advance. It's also a love story, and being that I am gay, it is it is predominantly gay characters in the story too. And it's fantasy very much, because it's time travel. It's
And so you also have a second book.
I also have a second book as well. My second book is called The Amazing Tale of Anahimul and the Gold Sovereign. This, the inspiration for this one really is my ancestry, because I had a great-great-grandmother called Anna, who came from Germany and lived in Whitechapel in the 1870s. And that's my mother's side, that's my East End side of the family. And so in the story in the book is not her story. but in the Anna story, it's the same kind of character. She comes from Germany in the 1870s, and she comes to live in Whitechapel, and she gets wrapped up with the people around Jack the Ripper in the 1880s. And she escapes from almost being killed by Jack Ripper in the 1880s. But and I don't want to give it away, because people will hopefully read it at some point. What the whole thing actually hinges on the end is a bit of a what if, and it's a what if she had and what if she hadn't. And there is a moment in the book where she could be killed. And she doesn't.
Oh.
And then there is again a strong. There's a lot about fate and destiny and the afterlife.
Wow! So intriguing. Two novels by Stevie Hendon that have Flying Rockets and Bombs, Fate, Fantasy, A Gay Love Story, Jack the Ripper, and of course South London and East London.
Because of course these things are all from the eclectic, how did you put
the
it?
Renaissance man.
The eclectic Renaissance man's head.
Wonderful. And actually, if you go to amazon.co.uk and mm-hmm. type in Stevie's name, Stevie Hendon, these mm-hmm. books will come.
They do indeed, yes.
Fantastic. So now, moving on to our final question. You're very involved in the local community. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, and, you know, since Neil and I mean, Neil and I have lived in Court Lane for, it'll be 14 years on the 16th of April. Which is, you know, we feel like we're just about becoming established residents now, you know, which is nice. And we've always liked to, we like to have our community roots down, you know, which is great. So one of the main things we've done for a number of years is to be heavily involved with the Dulwich Festival, and particularly with the open house part of Dulwich Festival. And for those who aren't familiar with Dulwich Festival open house, it's basically artists showing their work in people's houses for the public to come and have a look. Neil and I first came across this maybe a year or so after we moved to Court Lane, and our interest was really poking around people's houses to see how they decorated them, which I think is lots of the reason why people do it.
Yeah, you know. Seems to be nosy.
But actually, we actually came across some really nice art as well and purchased some, so it works. And then we thought, okay, this would be a nice thing to do. Neil, my husband, is he operates in a very creative world, although he is not an artist. I am not an artist, although I am creative. So we over a number of years for the open house events have invited artists to show their work in our house for 2 days over the open house weekend. We always have a party on the Friday night to launch it, which is always lively. We do like to throw a party. And that's been an extremely it's a nice thing to be involved with, because you know you get to meet people in the community you've not met before, but also it's an opportunity to give a little bit of support to artists that wouldn't otherwise have anywhere to show their work. So we really enjoy doing that. Other things that we have been involved in, I'm going to be slightly immodest, and so we say we have a lovely garden.
I've seen it, and it is indeed a lovely garden.
thank you. Which I'm extremely proud of, and we're very honoured to open that for the National Garden Scheme. Not every year, but for some years. And for those who don't know, the National Garden Scheme is an umbrella charity that raises money, which is then passed on to people like Mammillion or Parkinson's Research. So it's a great way of raising money. And we're very well known with our NGS days, because we always do cream teas and cakes and cream teas, which go down extremely well. And of course you can ask people for a reasonable amount of money for a cup of tea or a cake, because it's all for charity. And we've made a nice amount of money. So we're doing that this year. We're also doing a second garden opening this year for Link Southwark. For those who don't know, it's a local charity who help to run pensioners to hospital appointments and to the shops and things like that, which is a very good thing to support. I've also been on the committee of the Friends of the Dulwich Picture Gallery in the past, so I was helping with them sort of on the membership side. And I've also been involved in the local gardening club.
And you write for Dulwich On View.
And I write for Dulwich On View. Well spotted, I missed that one.
Which is the magazine, online magazine, which I co-founded with a number of other writers and artists, and currently run by Shilpa Begum. It's a wonderful online magazine full of stuff around about Dulwich and South London. And you write about your great passion, which is South London.
Absolutely, and it's a very nice opportunity, because I mean, writing novels is a particular type of writing. You'll know this yourself, young mate, because you've written across a different disciplines, haven't you? And then I think writing for Dulwich On View, it's just a different it's just a different mindset, it's a really nice opportunity, to be able to do that and to share some of my, passions about, why we enjoy this place that we inhabit.
Wonderful. Now, if people want to find out more about you and your books, where can they go?
Yes, there is a... I do have a Facebook author page. I don't have a website, very naughty, but I do have a Facebook author page, which is Facebook Stevie Hendon author page.
I have, on the South London Voices podcast, this last section called the South London Special.
Right.
And in this section, I ask my guest, and I also myself, share something special relating to South London.
Okay.
So we hope our listeners can go and check out. Maybe it's a place, a book, a story about South London, a work of art, or anything really that's special to us. So, Stevie Hendon, what's your South London special?
When you asked me to consider this, there were lots of possibilities, but I keep coming back to, and I'm magnetically attracted to the Crystal Palace. And when I say Crystal Palace, I don't mean the area. I mean specifically the Crystal Palace site and Crystal Palace Park, which for me has always been one of the most intriguing and wonderful things. I can blame my family for this part because when my mother was a child, she lived in Village Way in Beckenham, which is on the next reach to Crystal Palace, and she used to tell me how she used to watch it sort of glinting in the sunshine and how beautiful it was, and then of course she was woken by my grandmother in 1936 to watch it burning down.
She actually saw it burning down.
So this really inspired me. I always had a very a brain that got inspired by things. Latterly, when I was at school in Penge, there was always lots of horror stories by the boys, like, oh, you can't go up there, there's rats the size of cats, and that sort of kind of thing, which was quite intriguing. And then when I first lived in specifically in Crystal Palace, up Norwood in the late 1970s, I realised that, you could explore this place. And at that time, it was more overgrown than it is now. And I don't mean the park, I mean specifically the top side. And literally, you would push your way through undergrowth, and oh, there was a sphinx. And there's just something, there's something absolutely magical about it for me. And I maintain that actually, if you go to the top site and if you close your eyes and stand there and feel with your feet, there is, you can just feel the history. And all the people that have been there, and the Victorian ladies, wandering around looking at the exhibits, and the sadness, and it's just amazing. It's just so iconic. And there's lots of other little bits, because there's the Crystal Palace subway, which is it's a very, very beautiful piece of architecture underneath the Crystal Palace Parade. Which led from the Crystal Palace High Level Station into the palace, and it's the most beautiful Byzantine brickwork, which is sometimes open to the public. I also love the dinosaurs in Crystal Palace Park, which I just think are just like amazing.
They're fabulous.
It's just like, it's just great. I mean, this was Victorian. The Victorians wanting to educate, so what should they do? They built metal dinosaurs, and then actually, if you walk past, there's a part of the top part of the lake where there's a replica coal seam, so your children could walk around and go, that's what a coal seam looks like. It's fantastic. I love it. So that history, and I am so so passionate, about it, that in my second book, which we were talking about earlier, part of the book, which is in the next life, is actually sort of set in a fantasy, otherworldly version, of the Crystal Palace,
wow,
about 300 times the size.
I've got goosebumps.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been, or if you haven't been recently, or if you love it and you go regularly, please do check out
Absolutely.
CB's South London Special, which is Crystal Palace Park. So fantastic. So my South London special, just listening to you speak, I've actually changed myself.
That's all right.
I would say go and explore Sydenham Wood, Dulwich Wood, the Great North Wood, in that area.
Yes.
And walking around there, you just get a sense you're not in London.
Yes.
You know, you hear the birds, you see the trees.
Absolutely.
And there's this ruined, there's a folly.
Yes.
Which is like a ruined, ghostly ruin of a chapel, but actually it's a Victorian folly.
It was the folly belonging to a house on Sydenham Hill,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, and you got to love the Victorians. They just love their stuff.
But also, and I you know, I share your enthusiasm for that place as well, but I mean also, you know, again, when you walk up the pathway through the middle of the woods, which is on the track of the old railway, which used to take people up to the Crystal Palace, again, if you just close your eyes and just feel, it's got this wonderful, amazing sort of sense of history.
Yeah.
And if you go to the tunnel mouth, you know, at the end of the railway line, I think you can still smell a little bit of soot and it's really,
yes,
you know.
Yeah. History, nature, wildlife.
Exactly, it's amazing place. I'm with you on that. You're not in London. you're somewhere else totally, aren't you? You know, when you're there.
Yeah. So our South London voice today was Stevie Hendon. Thank you, Stevie.
Thank you very much, Anne-Mo, for the opportunity to talk to you today. Really appreciate it.
To find links to some of the things we talked about today, go to southlondonvoices.co.uk and search for Stevie Hendon. The South London Voices podcast is hosted by me, Yang-Mei Ui, and is produced by tigerspirit.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at South London Vox, that's V-O-X, at South London V-O-X, and we're also on Facebook, and you can go to facebook.com/South London Voices. Thanks for listening.